Blog Talk Radio.
Because you never know where life is going to take you, and you can't change where you've been. But today, I have the opportunity to choose. Here I am now looking at 30, and I got so much to say. Gotta get this off of my chest, I gotta let it go today. I was always too concerned about what everybody would think. But I can't live for everybody, I gotta live my life for me, yeah. I've reached a fork in the road of my life, and ain't nothing gonna happen unless I decide to be the best that I can be. To be authentic and love. Painful things I thought that I would never make it through. Filled up with shame from the top of my head to the soles of my shoes. I put myself in so many chaotic circumstances. By the grace of God, I've been given so many second chances. But today I decided to let it all go. I'm dropping these bags, I'm making room for my joy.
Good evening, and welcome to the Initiative Radio Network. I'm your host for the evening, your life and economic empowerment strategist, Shannon C. Harris. And I hope that you are choosing to have a wonderful day and having a wonderful evening. Just as my girl, India Ari, said, I'm hoping that you're choosing to make the best of your life. And I thank you for tuning in this evening and for being with me. As always, I never take it for granted that you're here spending this time with me. You could be anywhere doing anything else, but you decided to tune in this evening to the Initiative Radio Network. And for that, I am thankful and I am honored. And if you've had the opportunity to check into the topic for this evening, we're going to be discussing the hashtag MeToo or the MeToo movement that was started by Sister Tarana Burke in 2007, but it has he gained a lot of publicity due to some celebrities coming out talking about their stories and their experience with sexual abuse and sexual misconduct. But before we get into that, I just want to let you know, if you are listening online, that you're more than welcome to call in and voice your comments or ask any questions. As I always say, everybody has the right to their opinion. I don't tell anybody what to think. I'm just trying to give you something to think about. So please call in to 563-999-3682. And if you want to speak, now unmute your line so that you can have a part in the conversation. Or if you want to submit your questions via Facebook Messenger, you can do that through my Facebook page, No Longer Broken. And as always, I am your life and economic empowerment strategist, trying to help you to get to a better place in life and to live the best life that you can, knowing that no matter what you've been through, no matter where you've been or what has happened to you, tomorrow is another day and you can be successful and you can succeed. So we're going to jump into our topic this evening. So sisters, grab your glass, grab a cup, grab a blanket, grab a journal, grab something to write with, because I'm hoping that this will be a thought-provoking conversation that we'll have this evening. You know, dealing with the subject of sexual abuse or having gone through sexual trauma is not something that a lot of women or men want to speak about when it comes to different areas of their lives. But it's something that affects us if you've ever been through it. And if you know someone that's been through it and you're in a close relationship with them, it affects them. That's something that you ever forget. It's something that will drastically alter your life. And if you've never experienced it, which in this day and time, and it's hard to believe, but there are people who have never experienced sexual abuse or sexual misconduct. And I remember I was sitting in a women's group and participating, and one of the women in there said she was surprised. Actually, the moderator of the group said she was surprised at how many women raised their hands when she asked if they had ever experienced that. And to me, it was a little funny that she even asked the question, because I'm like, who hasn't? And I think that it's a conversation that many of us don't want to talk about, because it depends on the kind of family that you came from, maybe, or just the fact that you don't want to be labeled, or you don't want to have a stigma placed on you. And we live in a world where, instead of the victimizer being punished or looked at, I should say a society, I don't want to say a world, but we live in a society where the victim is usually the one who gets the finger pointed at them. In the case of a woman, she gets blamed for the way that she was dressed, or maybe where she was, or the time of day, or maybe she was being flirtatious according to the predator, or if she hadn't been out so late, or she didn't have that top on, that skirt, or she acted like she wanted it. And the reason that I want to talk about this, for me, I don't know about any of you that are listening, but I am appreciating the fact that there are people that are stepping forward and publicly speaking about their experience with sexual misconduct and sexual violence. I can appreciate that. But my thoughts can't help but to go to women who have not spoken up, and women who have tried to bury their history with sexual misconduct and being molested or raped or having experienced incest. And I know that sometimes
if we have not healed from our trauma, that certain conversations can trigger things in us. And we may not even understand why we're acting the way that we are. If you've ever experienced this type of trauma, certain sounds, certain smells, certain places, a certain tone in someone's voice can be a trigger for evil memories that you've wanted to erase from your mind, or that you try to act like don't exist. And my thoughts go to women that may be experiencing this. And it's not, there's a large place where victims can really be safe. And I'm glad that this sister started the Me Too movement. She said that it was born out of a conversation that she had with a 13-year-old girl in 1997. And at the time of the speech, at the time that the girl was telling the story to her, she said it left her speechless and there wasn't anything that she could really say to the girl. And that it bothered her, from what I'm gathering from her story, that she actually kind of just sat there and listened to the story and, you know, probably gave some generic words of encouragement. But she said that it bothered her for so many years that she just couldn't simply say, "Me too." And how many of you as women, because you know, we as women, we get together and we kiki and we talk and we have all these conversations and we talk about some of everything under the sun. You know what I'm saying? We get grimy sometimes, you know, if you have that kind of friendship with your friends. You might have that one friend that y'all talk about some, you know, ratchet stuff, or you complain about your man, you complain about your children, you complain about your parents, you complain about your job, you complain about your money, you complain about the price of the stock market, you complain about the economy, you complain about politics, we complain about everything else, and we can have these big conversations. I mean, we can more readily talk about our man going upside our head and putting his hands on us and cry and boohoo about that. But that one secret that we keep, that we don't talk to our girlfriends about maybe our uncle touched us, maybe your father touched you. For some of us, it goes very deep into having a mother. Maybe your mother touched you inappropriately. Cousins. I mean, the gamut is so vast. But we don't have this conversation. A lot of us need to have that conversation with someone because we're sitting as a ticking time bomb. And again, my question goes out there to you. If you have a Me Too situation, if you haven't talked to anyone about your Me Too, and now, in a sense, you're forced to reckon with it, because I know as I hear other people's stories, you can't help but go to your own story if you hear someone else's story. It's kind of like the conversation you might be having with your girlfriend and she's talking about, you know, her headache and this, that, and other. You're like, girl, I know, because this last week, such and such and such and such, you know, you have comparison stories. So how can you not listen to another woman's story? Talk about her trauma, talk about her pain, and your mind not go back to your own. And there are different stages through getting through traumatic situations like this. There's different levels of healing. And for most of us as Black women, I believe our healing is just out of sight, out of mind. For some of us, we've had the story of telling someone when we were at a young age, or we told someone and they dismissed us. And that further left us shattered. that further left us broken. Because how do you go to the person that's supposed to protect you? Because it's not like that happens to you and you start running to everybody in around telling you what, telling them what happened to you. You're going to someone that you trust. You're going to someone that you think can either give you advice to protect you or punish the bad person, especially if you're a child. And you got dismissed. Or a common occurrence among Black women who have been sexually mishandled. We may go to a female in our family that we trust and share our story, and she looks at you with sympathy, or she may look at you with disdain. Like, you don't have the right to complain about it because this is just what happens to us. It happened to me, but look at me, I'm fine. I got over it. You'll get over it too. It reminds me of the line in The Color Purple when Sophia told Miss Seeley in the cornfield that all her life she had to fight because a girl child ain't safe in a family full of men. And I wonder how many of us, when we heard that line, it caused us to pause. Or did it just really go over our head as if some type of normalcy? So I want you, if you're a woman out there that has a Me Too situation that you have not spoken on, and you find yourself continuing to bury it, I'm not a licensed psychologist. I'm not a licensed therapist. But as a certified life coach, I have worked with women who this issue comes up in their life and they don't think it's connected to the blockages that they're having in their lives. I have a Me Too story. And the thing that I find common is that in a lot of women, it's not just one situation that something happened. But it can be a situation where there was an occurrence that happened over and over and over again. And when you experience being violated multiple times, not to say you don't experience it if you're violated one time, but if you are violated multiple times, you start to feel as if that's what you're supposed to, well, that's how you're supposed to live your life, but that's why you're put here. Speaking for myself, when I got old enough to know what sex was, because the first time I was molested was at the age of 5. And throughout the course of my young age, I was molested by multiple people, including a female. And when I got old enough to know what sex was, I had this mindset that that was the only reason that I had been put on this earth, was to bring other people pleasure from my pain. And growing up in a church and strict Christian family, I remember really distinctively remembering the very first time that I had sex consensually. And for those of you who may not have listened to my show before, please understand, I keep it real here on this show. I don't ask anyone for sympathy. I don't apologize for anything because, again, everyone has their own opinion and they're entitled to it. And I know that everything happens to us for a reason. I'm no longer bound by my past. I'm no longer a victim to my past. I am a victor. And so I don't, there's no shame in it for me. So I don't have a problem sharing my story. If people judge me because of it, that's their problem, not mine, because I've dealt with it and I know who I am. And any of you sisters out there that are dealing with it, that you get to this place too, as well. But as I was saying, the very first time that I consensually had sex, I remember thinking back to all the stories about how I heard your first time was supposed to be. And it was nothing like that. There was no pain. There was no resistance. There was nothing. And it took me back to a memory. And I kind of wondered about that. When I got older, I wondered about that. Because I remember my first time. And it wasn't, you know, a teenager. I was 14 years old. And it's not all that it's cracked up to be. You're just like, yeah, this is what the hoopla is all about. Okay. But I remember when I got older, and I remembered that moment when I actually had heard about the fact that, you know, how your first time is supposed to be, if you're a virgin, there should be some pain and things like that, some resistance. And when I heard that, I was actually in a mosque meeting, and I heard it, and it triggered me back to a memory of remembering a time that I had gotten molested at the school to by an older student, an older male. And all of the memories came flooding back to me. I remember hiding my bloodstained underwear, but at the time I was like 6 years, 6 or 7 years old, and I didn't know what that meant. I just knew that this boy had touched me. And when he got done touching me, it hurt. And I went to the bathroom and I went home. I just knew something bad had happened to me, but it had happened to me before. And when it happened to me before, I was told not to tell or to say anything. And so being in that meeting, it triggered something in me. And as I was saying, going through the years when I was younger, when I was 11, I finally did speak to someone that I trusted, a female that I trusted. We were at church, we were doing a prayer service, and I had carried this weight even as a child. I carried this pain and this heaviness and this guilt and this self-hatred around for myself. And the only thing I knew that I kept hearing in church that Jesus could free me from it, that God could free me from it, that if I pray enough, that this pain and this weight that I was carrying around, that I could be delivered from it. So we were 11, I was 11 years old, and we were at a prayer service at church, and we were praying all night, and I decided that I was going to speak out about it finally. And I went to this woman that I trusted, and I just knew that she would be able to help me. So with tears streaming down my face, I walked to her, and I told her, you know, when I was a little girl, I was touched, and I was touched wrong, and I got touched many times. And I didn't get the response that I was expecting. I didn't get I wanted someone to see my pain with me. And if you've ever been traumatized, you know what I mean. I wanted someone to have this look of horror on their face, like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you. Come here, baby, I got you. I wanted someone to scoop me up and take away the pain at the moment, and that didn't happen. I got touched on my head, and there was a small smile on her face, and she told me, just go pray. And at that time, I don't recall ever speaking about it again as a child, not to a grown-up. I had a best friend, and she was young too, and we got to talking one day. Somehow, it came up, and we realized that we had both experienced the same thing, and it kind of drew us closer. I was also raped by my boss when I was 18 years old. And as some of you may have heard me speak on my Facebook Live post about Oprah's speech, and she was talking about remembering the women who suffer in silence because they have bills to pay and children to take care of and dreams to achieve. So they've kind of just taken one team with being mishandled sexually. And I hope that me using the term mishandled sexually does not in any way offend you or you're taking it to be insensitive. Because as women in this society, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around why constantly being treated as second-class citizens, as if you can do anything to a woman and it's okay. And when a woman tries to rise above all of the victimization she has experienced, or all of the trauma she has experienced, or all of the adversity she has experienced, instead of her being celebrated, she's looked at as if she is out of her place. She's out of her element. She's not supposed to speak up. She's not supposed to want more. She's not supposed to want to be in places of leadership. She's not supposed to want to achieve the greatest heights that she possibly can according to her God-given talents and her abilities. She's just a woman. And that is something that always has been a point. That's been a pain point for me. And not because I am a woman and I think that I'm less than, but because I want my daughters to be appreciated for the females that they are. I want them to be loved as the females that they are. I want them to be seen as the gift that they are to the world, being a woman. And in the society that we live in, females really are not celebrated as much as we need to be. And I pray that the men who say that they love us and the men who say that they support us will begin to remember that. To remember that we are a gift to you. And that if you treat the woman in your life with the respect that she deserves, she can do so much for you. She can take you to the heights that you want to go to achieve the many things in your life that you desire. And I was looking for something that I wanted to share with you, a piece that I wrote in reference to it saying, us just being a woman, but I can't find it right now, but hopefully it will pop up for me before the end of the show, because I definitely want to share that with you. But the other part of this conversation that came up for me and the thoughts that came up for me, because in Oprah's speech, she mentioned the sister that had just passed away not too long ago. And she had been raped by multiple men. And even though the men who raped her were identified because she was a Black woman and she had been raped by white men, they were never prosecuted. And she was saying that she hoped that the sister knew that her story was being shared, and that there was, for lack of a better word, she didn't say this specifically, but basically a change of the guard. And that made me think about the blood that runs through my veins and the women who came before me, my ancestors. And I don't know how many of you believe it or you acknowledge it or not, but I still feel them with me. And there's different things that will come up in the media. There will be different things that come up in the news. There will be different things that I will read pertaining to Black women and the treatment of Black women. And I will feel the groaning in my body. And I think about all of the hundreds, thousands of women who were brutally violated after they were brought here on slave ships. They were violated on the slave ships, then they were violated when they got here, and that the violating of these women was just another course of business. It was just another day. And that in the midst of their trauma, there was no one that they could tell. They couldn't tell their husbands. They couldn't tell the men on the plantation. They couldn't tell the law. They couldn't tell another slave owner. So every time they were violated, they had to suffer in silence. And I constantly, when I think about this subject, I have this, I don't want to say constantly, when I think about this subject, I have this picture in my mind of a woman who already has to go into a work like a man, but she's still supposed to do the biological work of a woman, meaning that she could be pregnant with child. If you've ever carried a baby, the things that your body undergoes when it's bringing new life into the world, the tiredness, the sickness, but these women still had to work from sunup to sundown on their feet, bending over if they were in a field, or serving if they were in a house. No matter what they were doing, they were considered slaves and they were still working. So they had to work like men, but still do the biological function of a woman. And at any time, they could be tapped on the shoulder. Or at any time, they could be pulled out of their bed or out of their house. And to resist meant death. Maybe not just death for them, but death for their man, death for their children, or whoever the master decided they want to pay for the consequence of them resisting. Because as a woman, a strong woman who loves my family, loves my children, loves people around me, and I love deeply, you taking my life doesn't matter a whole lot. And I'm thinking there's probably women who are like, you know what, if you're going to kill me for resisting, that's fine, that's cool, I'll take that L. But I'll take this pain, and I'll let you violate me if it means that it's going to save my man that I love, it's going to save the children that I love, or my people. So after they were violated by that person, they had to go back. And I'm sure even though there are women and men that knew exactly what was going on and knew that it wasn't her fault or knew that it wasn't their fault, they were still being judged. They were still being judged for the master. And they were probably ostracized to a certain degree by their man, because it's not in a man's nature to want to share his woman. And this legacy of secrecy and keeping silent and wearing your shame with your chin up has become the birthright of many Black women. That have the blood of slaves running through their veins. So maybe for yourself, you may not have been triggered by this frenzy of the Me Too movement. But if you're deeply connected to your roots, if you're deeply connected to your ancestry and the spirit of your ancestors, this could be causing some things to awaken in you that you may not have even been aware of. But for a moment, just take a roll call of your life. Just take a moment to slow the motion down and take a moment to just go over your behavior. For a moment, let's get still for a second and think about Me Too and what that means. When you see the hashtag Me Too or you hear about the Me Too movement, it's to bring awareness to sexual violence, sexual misconduct, and to give voice to their victims. Where does your mind go when you hear that? What do you feel in your body? What do you feel in your heart? Are you aware of any of your relatives that have experienced this type of trauma? And I know that men experience it too. I'm not taking away from that. And if you're a male and you're listening to it, you may want to do the same evaluation, because men were also raped on the plantation. I have read where men were raped by their masters as a way to break their manhood, as a way to demean them, and to bring down their testosterone so that they wouldn't want to fight. Because when somebody can take something that intimate away from you, it changes your life. You are altered. If you're a male, it does something to you. I've talked to few men who have felt safe enough with me as a woman to share their stories. And I don't take anything away from these brothers, because a lot of times they not only go through the trauma of being violated. You know, if they were violated by a woman, that's one thing. They still have to deal with the trauma of the violation. But a lot of times they were violated by other men. So they not only have to battle being a victim, but they also have to battle sexual identity. I know there are those people out there that say, you know, people are born gay, they don't have a choice. But that's not true. That I don't believe that. And if that is true, that's not always the case. I know that that's not always the case. So for men who may have experienced this, there might be some people out there that be like, oh, well, you know, if he's thinking that he might be gay because he was a victim, he was always gay. That's not true. And I believe that we as women have to be sensitive enough, and we have to be open enough to be able to allow our men to be able to share this side of themselves with us. The same way that men have to allow women who have dealt with this to be able to be open. As I shared, we were having a show a few months ago, and there were some brothers that were saying, why are women thoughts and things like that? Well, let me tell you one thing about a woman. That if you see a woman that is overly promiscuous, I'll bet my bottom dollar that somewhere in her history, she's been sexually abused. Women are not by nature promiscuous because of the way we're set up as women. We're set up as women to receive. and we want to produce, and we want to produce for a man that we love. But as a woman, when you are violated and you kind of have this, you're kind of taught in an indirect way that you can use your body to get what you want, or that the only reason people want you or men want you is because of your body. And that was the thought that I adopted, or that's what I kind of, at the end of the day, when I became sexually active, that was what I surmised, that was all that I was good for, that was the only thing that I had to give men, was my body. They didn't care about my brain. I graduated high school when I was 15, started college when I was 16, got into worse situations when I was 16 because I was around older men that could tell that I was green and I didn't know what was going on in the world. But they were willing to sleep with me. So I'm thinking, hey, you know, this is what it's about. This is how the world works. They don't care anything about me being smart. They don't care nothing about me being pretty. Only thing they want me for is my body, and that's what I had learned to give. And after being raped by my boss when I was 18, I didn't tell anybody. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, if didn't nobody give a damn when I was a child, who's going to give a damn when I was as an adult? And I blamed myself. He was my boss. I trusted him. He seemed like a decent guy. He wanted me to see his house that he was redoing. I didn't think anything wrong with it. I didn't see anything wrong with it. I fought back, but he was stronger and bigger than I was. So I blamed myself after it happened. I blamed myself for going. I should have known better. Shouldn't have went with them. Should have fought back harder. I should have. All of these should have. But in all actuality, it was not my fault. And the truth is I don't care if I would have went to his house but naked. No means no, and he did not have the right to violate me. But again, we as women have this legacy of secrecy and shame that has been ingrained into us. And I looked up to see if there had been any studies about PTSD being hereditary. And surprisingly enough, which is something I believed anyway, but surprisingly enough, there are studies going on that says they believe that PTSD is hereditary. And one of the articles that I read says that traumatic experiences can induce behavioral disorders that are passed down from one generation to the next. It is only recently that scientists have begun to understand the psychological processes underlying hereditary trauma. The same way that bipolar disorder is traced back to a particular gene in a family, they also believe that there's a molecular process involved in the transference of trauma from generation to generation. Now, if you look at it, let's say per se that, you know, you don't agree with that or you think that's something different. But if you think about the fact that from the time a child brain is developed in the womb of its mother, the things that that woman goes through, the things that that woman feels, the things that that woman entertains is being imprinted on the brain of her unborn child. Great, 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 great grandmothers, our aunties, cousins, they didn't have therapists. They didn't have psychologists to go to.
They couldn't read and write for the most part, most of them. So they didn't have a journal to write their stories in. They may have talked to each other, but what could they do? Another famous line from the movie Color Purple, "You better not tell nobody but God." Raped by her stepfather. Where was her mother? And how many times, even in today's society, do we see stories where women have brought men into their houses and they're violating their daughters, and instead of the woman doing something to the man, she gets mad at the daughter for being too fast or being too hot. I believe that it's important for us as women to get more support groups together to talk about this issue. Because as I said before, being traumatized sexually alters your life. It's not like having a broken leg where you put it in a cast and 6 months later you're fine. It took me over 30 years to finally get to a place where I felt that I could say, I am healed from this experience. Because the other thing that I found is that if you do not get healed from the trauma that you've experienced, if you do not honestly get to a place where you are a victor over your victimization, you will still attract pain and more abuse into your life. And no matter how much you try to outrun it, no matter how much you try to pick the right person, no matter how much you try to get to the right person, if you don't come to a certain place in your life and you don't get to a level of healing in your life, you will continue to live in that victimization. You will continue to live in that space of trauma. And it will continue to show up over and over and over again in your life. It may not be as harsh as the actual act that you went through, the molestation, the rape, the incest, what have you. May not be that way, but it will show up in a different side, a different form of abuse. I have a lot of sisters out here that are on drugs trying to forget the pain of what happened to them. And as I was saying earlier, you got a lot of brothers that are not having these conversations with the women in their lives or the women that show up in their lives. They just see them out there having sex with this one and hopping from this one to that one like it doesn't really matter. But they're not stopping to say, sister, girlfriend, baby, what's really going on here? Do you need to talk? For me, one of the biggest things that kept showing up is that I wanted to find a man in my life that would protect me, that would come off as a protector. And when I look back and I see that there were a couple of good men that actually did show up in my life, the thing that turned me off about them is that they did not have a protective nature. They were cool, they were good friends, and they were willing to buy me whatever and be there and tell me how beautiful I was, but they didn't have a protector's mentality. And that could be a reason why a lot of women,
you know, they say, well, why do women want a bad boy, or why do these want bad boys? It's not necessarily that they want a bad boy, but if you were not protected from someone hurting you, you have a natural inclination to continue to look for someone that will protect you, that will keep you safe, because you're still living from that spot of that little girl. And I can't tell you how many times that little girl showed up and took over my life and caused so much trauma in my life, even after I became a grown woman, because I didn't recognize that I was still functioning from the pain of that five-year-old girl. And a lot of us may not want to admit it, and we think that we have our lives under control, but we don't, because we're still functioning out of our pain. We're still functioning as a victim. We're still functioning out of our trauma. So I accepted verbal abuse. I accepted emotional abuse. I accepted mental abuse, because I really subconsciously agreed with what was being said about me and what was being done to me, because I felt that I deserved the punishment for not speaking up sooner or not fighting back harder. I eventually got to the point where I was determined that I was going to get over this, and I wasn't going to let this rule my life anymore. I recognized that I was attracting unhealthy relationships. I realized that I was attracting abusive men into my life. And I had an inkling that it was connected to the abuse that I had experienced as a child and throughout my life. And I was determined that I was going to get free. I didn't care what I had to do. And what happened for me was a blessing in disguise. About 6 weeks after my daughter was born in 2015, I ended up in the hospital with postpartum congestive heart failure. And according to the cardiologist, I was at the risk of having a heart attack at any moment, because according to them, the strain of the pregnancy had put such a strain on my body that my heart was not beating properly. It was not pumping the blood through my body properly, and my heart was very weak. So for 2.5 months, I had to wear a portable defibrillator in case I did have a heart attack during my sleep, or at any time it would shock me back to life and give me enough time to get to the hospital for further treatment. And because of this, it was told that I couldn't sleep close to my daughter at night, because I fall asleep with my daughter close to me, because in the event my heart stopped beating and it shocked me, it would send a shock through her as well, and the voltage could be too strong to possibly kill her. So I found myself not being able to sleep at night. And I went for a follow-up appointment, and I was like, I think I need to talk to someone, because I'm developing anxiety. And I wasn't that I was afraid to die, but I didn't want to die in my sleep. So I couldn't sleep at night. And they sent me to a therapist to talk about that, to work through that, and to work through my anxiety. And while I was there, Spirit came and said, you need to use this opportunity to work through the trauma. Take advantage of the fact that it's being covered by your insurance and work through this. And I also liked the fact that I had tried to talk to spiritual people before, and again, it was just treated as if I was talking about having a pimple on my chin. And I was getting frustrated, because I had prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed until I felt like I couldn't pray anymore. I tried to get over it and get over it and get over it until it seemed like I was burying it, and then it would pop up, and I would have like this moment of frustration, and I would act out, then I would bury it again. But getting pregnant with my daughter, who's now 2, by a man that I wasn't in love with and I didn't even want to be with,
with being over 30 years old and being in the presence of a man that I couldn't say no to because I felt guilty taking control of my body and standing up in what I wanted and saying, no, I don't want to be with you. I remember looking at him and crying and telling him, I really don't want to do this because I already feel bad about myself. This is not the way that I want my life to be. And him still looking at me. I'm not blaming him because when I look back at it, it should seem like I should have been able to take control of my life and just been like, I don't want to do this. I don't got to do this. But in that moment, I had reverted back to that young girl who didn't know how to say no, who couldn't say no. Who wasn't in the mind that my body was sacred and that I, as a woman, had the right to say no. And that I wasn't put here to give men pleasure from my pain. So after that, and the way people were treating me and looking at me and saying things about me and the names that they were calling me and conversations people were having about me that they didn't know that I had heard about, I was like, this is out of control. I can't keep doing this. I've got to stop this. And I was an emotional wreck. I was in emotional pain because I hadn't forgiven myself. And I didn't know how to forgive those people who had hurt me. I didn't know how to take down the wall that was protecting me. And I didn't know how to control that little girl who was still afraid. And was still wanting to be accepted. So talking to a person who didn't know me, who wasn't going to throw some oil on me and try to make me fall out on the floor, who wasn't going to try to get me to pray it away, or just try to minimize it as that was then and this now. And the funny thing about it was a lot of people that I talked to, they had been through the same situation. But what I didn't know is that you cannot expect someone to tell you how to receive healing who is not actively trying to get healed themselves. You can't ask someone that you're in a hole with, that's comfortable being in a hole, how to get out, because they won't be able to tell you. So in one of the sessions that we were having, I was dealing with fear. And for some reason, I don't remember exactly what was said at this moment that triggered this response in me. I do remember. We were talking about a situation that I was going through where I needed to get out of my comfort zone and ask for help. And being the kind of person that I am, every single girl, I've always been a do-it-yourselfer, and I don't really like to ask people for help, and I don't like to be vulnerable because being vulnerable to me meant showing a sign of weakness. And being raised the way that I was, there's no room for weakness. So I kept telling the therapist, I don't know why I can't ask for help. I don't know why it's so hard for me to feel vulnerable or feel like it's okay for me to look like I don't have it all together. I don't know what that's about. So she has this exercise she would go through me with where I have to go close my eyes and go inside and do this exercise. And I was at the time, I was like, I don't want to do this. here we go again. I'm just not in the mood for this. I'm already dealing with enough. I don't want to go inside, take a look at myself, have a conversation with myself. I don't feel like breaking myself down today. But I submitted. And so going through these series of questions in my head with why can't you be vulnerable? Why can't you be open? Why can't you ask for help? What's at the root cause of this? When you are vulnerable, how do you feel? What does it make you feel for you? And it took me back to being that five-year-old girl in that room with the man who molested me. And what came out of that was that I didn't like being vulnerable and I didn't like asking for help because I had asked for help to put on my nightgown. And I felt that if I had never asked, subconsciously, I didn't even know this. So when it came up in me and that when I was reflecting on it later, it blew me away. But I subconsciously was harboring that if I had never asked for help to put my nightgown on as a five-year-old girl, he would have never been in the room with me and he would have never been able to touch me. And he would have never been able to take away my innocence. And his brother would have never came to the door, caught him in the act, and told him, hurry up when you get done. Mom wants you to come downstairs. So I had found it hard to be vulnerable because to me, asking for help and being vulnerable opened up the door for people to hurt me. How many of you out there are finding yourself dealing with things that should be simple? Letting people in to a certain degree should be simple. You find yourself closed off. You find yourself overcompensating. Maybe you're too free. You're not free enough. But you know for yourself where the opposition is, where the imbalance is, and you know that it's not right. But you've experienced a trauma in your life that you haven't properly dealt with. Maybe you didn't deal with it because of how old you were. Maybe you didn't deal with it because of when it happened in your life. Maybe you didn't deal with it because of who it happened around or who it was by. For some of you, the person that victimized you is still in your family and you see them on a regular basis. And the only way for you to be able to live your life without going completely crazy was for you to bury it and act like it never happened. But the heart don't lie, baby girl. You can try to shop your way out of it. You can try to drink your way out of it. You can try to sex your way out of it. You can try to stonewall your way out of it. You can put up that attitude like you're untouchable, like you've got it all together. You can try to achieve your way out of it, educate yourself in the matter of just receiving all types of degrees. Pacify your way out of it. You can tolerate your way. You can try to tolerate your way out of it by letting whoever wants to do whatever they want to you. And you just feel you deserve it. You can try to pray yourself out of it. But the only way to completely free yourself from being a victim is that you have to stand toe-to-toe with that demon and fight for your freedom. As I told you, it took me 30 years or more to try to get to a place where I could actually function the way I needed to, and to stop living and allowing that pain to control my life. I was lying in bed a couple of nights ago on my way to sleep, and I like to pray myself to sleep sometimes, or meditate my way to sleep. And it hit me how free I am now, how healed I am now, how I remember not thinking that I was going to make it past the age of 24. I didn't think that I was going to have a long life. I didn't want a long life. I tried to commit suicide 2 times. Once when I was 16 and once when I was 18. And I didn't want to live a long life. I didn't see the purpose in it. I was in that much pain. I hated myself. I didn't think there was anything about me to love. I didn't think there was anything that I had to give to the world, except for life. And I was tired of giving that. I was tired of being laughed at behind my back because I didn't know. You know, I'd grown up in church and they talk about not having sex before you were married. Well, that had passed for me. I would tell myself I didn't get the luxury of knowing what it was like to really know what it was like to be a virgin, because that was taken away from me when I was 6 years old. I couldn't even look myself in the eye without feeling so many mixed emotions. Sometimes I felt sorry for myself. Sometimes I hated myself. Sometimes I felt I disgusted myself. And there was points when I was a little girl, I wanted children. But when I got older, I was like, there's no way in heck I want children. Because I had read somewhere that people who were victims of sexual abuse became abusers. And I was like, oh, hell no, that cannot be me. I'm not going to have no children. I don't even want to be around children. I hate children. Then I got pregnant with my oldest son, and that changed. Because I learned the gift that they could be to the world and what it looks like to bring children of purpose into this world, to help change the world. But when I was laying in bed the other night, my heart was so overwhelmed with gratitude because I've never been so free. And I truly have forgiven my abusers. I don't harbor any hate for them in my heart. I don't hate myself. I don't look at myself and be like, oh my God, you this, that, and the other. None of that. I love the woman that I am. I love the woman that I'm becoming. But I know all of those things had a part to play in it. And the reason that I really, really wanted to talk about this subject tonight is because I want for my sister what I want for myself. And I know that this occurrence of sexual abuse has gone on so much in our community. And I'm not taking away from any other woman of any other race or ethnicity that has undergone this, because we as women as a whole across the board, regardless of what we look like, we are not celebrated or appreciated the way that we should be, period. For the gift that we are to the world, for our love, for our reproduction abilities, for our strength, for our courage, for our compassion.
for our understanding, for our knowledge, for our tenacity. But especially us as Black women who carry, I believe we carry the pain of those before us in our DNA. It goes a little bit deeper than just not being appreciated as a woman. But we're not appreciated for who we are as individuals and the light that we bring to this world and the strength and the courage that we bring to this world as Black women. We still treat ourselves with the same slave mentality. Our men still treat us with the same slave mentality. And we have to find a way to heal from this. I really want to have a healing ceremony around this subject. And as I said earlier, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a licensed psychologist, but I am a certified life coach, and I have dealt with this area in myself and with other women. And if you are trying to deal with your own traumatic situation, if you are trying to get to the other side of this, if you are trying and you have been trying to become victorious over your victimization and triumph over your trauma, and you would like someone to be your partner in believing and work through this with you, please reach out to me. You can go to my website, CoachSCHarris.com, and send me a message on that page. And just reference that you heard the show tonight, or you listened to the replay of the show, or you even just seen the topic of it. And you want to know how to deal with the trauma that you've experienced in your life. And you want someone that will work with you through it. And as I said, I've been there. There's a no judgment zone. I don't care what you've done in your past. I don't care how the situation came about that led to your abuse, your victimization. I don't care about that. What I care about is your healing. What I care about is you getting over this thing so that you can live your best life. What I care about is you being able to look yourself in the mirror and appreciate the creation that you are, the beautiful woman that you are, that you can learn to appreciate your strength, that even in the midst of your tears and your pain and your hiding your secrets, that you still were able to function, even if you weren't. Even if you've taken on habits that are detrimental to you because you're trying to forget the pain, you're trying to forget the trauma, you're trying to forget what happened to you, even if that's the case, I don't care. I want to be a sister. I want to wrap my arms around you. I want to help you shoulder your pain. If we got to go back and recapture that little girl I'm still feeling lost, I'll go there with you. And I won't leave you until it's time. People come into our lives for reasons and for seasons. And if you're listening to me right now, and you know that you need to deal with this, do not feel ashamed to reach out. You've been
hiding this between, or you've been hiding this between, behind a perfectly beat face. Your lashes mask the pain in your eyes. You've got the perfect hairdo. It's covering the pain in your brain. You're dressed just right. You're dressed just perfectly. Nobody could ever guess. The scars that go covered by designer clothing or the perfect outfit, the perfect shoe. And when it comes up, you have your moment, you snap out. People around you can't figure out what's wrong with you. But you swallow the pain again, you bury it deep. You shake it off. But you haven't dealt with it. And you feel guilty. For even thinking about it because it happened so long ago. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. They say time heals all wounds, but this is one of those wounds that time does not heal. You just get better at masking the pain. And I say that time doesn't heal it because it alters how you see reality. It alters how you live your life. So please, don't go this alone anymore. Don't suffer in this alone anymore. And if you know someone who's gone through this experience or is dealing with trying to overcome a past of sexual abuse, sexual misconduct, sexual violence, be understanding. Don't be judgmental. Be a confidential ear. And I say confidential because to open up this Pandora's box of pain, to open up to someone and let them know about being violated is not an easy thing. Why do you think it's not readily talked about? And I've seen comments for some people who believe that these men and women who have come forward may not be telling the truth, because the big question is always, why did they wait so long? There's been people that have been traumatized so badly that they don't even speak for years. They don't talk. They weren't born mute. They know how to speak, but they don't talk. Trauma affects your brain. Whatever it was, why they allowed themselves to even experience it in the first place. You cannot judge them by saying, why did you take so long? Now, I do believe that there have been experiences where people make things up because there are individuals that are being used by other people to come after other people. There are people that make these situations up because they want their 15 minutes of fame when it comes to that. But I'm talking about on a level where people, we're not on big stages. We don't have press conferences. We don't have cameras in our faces. We're just your everyday people. And again, people have their own private reasons as to why they haven't spoken up or spoke out or why they haven't come forward. That's not for you to judge. but be a listening ear. Know that, let a person know that if they come to you and they open up their heart to you, they don't have to worry about it coming back to them from the neighbor, from another girlfriend. I don't care if y'all got a tight circle and she comes to you and she tells you. Even if you're sisters and you got a sister that comes to you and tells you something, she shouldn't hear about it from the other sisters. If she doesn't tell them, you shouldn't tell them. Don't run her business. I love seeing how we, as Black women, are starting to come together even more, and we're starting to embrace each other even more. We're starting to respect each other's differences, and it's been so refreshing not seeing the natural hair fights and things like that anymore, or the makeup fights or the skin fights. And we're just celebrating the Black girl magic that we each possess, regardless if our hair is natural or it's permed, if it's long or if it's short, if it's blonde or if it's Black. Just learning how to be your sister's keeper. Learning how to lock elbows with her and stand toe-to-toe with an enemy. Knowing how to give her a word of encouragement when she looks like she's down on her look or she's down on herself. One of the things that I love, that one of my favorite coaches, and I consider her a mentor, says, Miss Ayama Van Zandt, when she said, "Not on my watch." And that's the attitude I believe that we all have to take in our community. And I'm imploring you as brothers, when it comes to us as Black women, we've waited for so long. It's not always that we don't want to let you in. It's sometimes we don't know how. If you're a woman that has experienced trauma and your father wasn't there, and it's a natural instinct for us to learn to rely on a man, but he wasn't there, how is she supposed to trust you 100%? If she hasn't been taught what a real man looks like, how is she supposed to look at you if you are one? You have to be patient with us. Every day, we're fighting on a different front. We fight for us. We fight for our people. We fight for Black, white people. We fight for the world. If you looked over the last few months, you see women taking more prominent positions in political offices. We had to deal with the whole thing of a Black woman who was in the White House, who was selling us out as a people. Now she's been kicked out of her position. And I'm sure there are some of us as Black women that are like, you know, she got what she deserved. But we still got the sister code. And some of us still feel bad for her. Like, she just got you. She's still a Black woman. This is what they do to us. And we still might want to put our hands on her, but at the same time, we're trying to pick her up and dust her off and be like, look, well, she's going to have to humble herself and come correct. But she's still a Black woman. She's trying to play the game. And there's always a game played her. But brothers, do your part to help protect us and be patient with us and try to be part of our healing as we're trying to be part of yours. we're able to come together and do so many mighty things. And we have so many wounds that need to be healed, and we have so many memories that need to be attended to. We cannot continue to act as a people as if these things have not happened. We cannot continue to act as if there's so many things that have happened to us as a people that go cellular deep and are carried over in our DNA. So we have to learn how to break the cycle. We have to learn how to reprogram. We have to make sure what we're passing on to our children are things of strength and things of power. As India Reid stated in her song at the beginning of the show, I choose. We have the power of choice. And we have to make the choice to choose. So I'm imploring you, sister, to choose to reach out and get healed, to actively pursue your healing. Don't just sit back again and say, that was then, this is now. I dealt with it. I'm okay. This is what happens to us. Maybe I shouldn't have been here. It happened to my mom. She was okay. It happened to my auntie. She was okay. It happened to my grandmother. They're okay. We got a big house. We got a car. I don't need a man. I got good credit. I got this, or I'm making it. Don't let that be the legacy that you leave your daughters. I remember as my daughters were little, I watched them like a hawk. When they got old enough to understand, which for me was when they were able to sit up in the bathtub on their own. And as they would bathe, and I would point to them and be like, that's your girl business. That's your girl business. Don't let anybody touch you on your girl business. And when as they got older, I would question them and ask them. When they got to a certain age, you know, they weren't even teenagers. They weren't allowed to sit in any men's laps, their father's laps included. Not that I thought that their father would ever do anything to them, because he had his own story as well as I did. But we both agreed to it. He knew it too. But nature can be a lot stronger than reasoning. And they weren't allowed to walk around the house a certain kind of way, especially since they had brothers. Their brothers had to respect them when the door was closed. They had to go in a certain way, knock on the door. They couldn't just bust in the bathroom or anything like that. They couldn't wear short shorts, crab cleavage out, none of that kind of stuff. They were taught to respect themselves from a young age. And some of us may harbor some resentment toward the person that we felt was supposed to take care of us and was supposed to protect us. I've been there. Done that. I had the same feelings, but you know what? I had to forgive that as well. Because for whatever reason, it didn't happen that way. And I can no longer let their choice or their mistake or their lack thereof be my concern. I have to choose forgiveness for myself. Because to me, forgiveness equals freedom, and I'd rather be free than to harbor resentment and be angry over something that I cannot change.
And I believe that for most of us, the pain from dealing with a traumatic situation of sexual abuse is because we blame ourselves and we have not forgiven ourselves and we don't know how. We don't know what it looks like. And I know that for myself, it took me a long time to forgive myself because I felt that if I forgave myself, then that meant that I consented to what happened. But that's not at all what that means. I was a 5-year-old little girl. I didn't know what to say yes to. I didn't know what to say no to. Only thing that I knew is that when it was done, it didn't feel right. And I didn't know. That's all that I knew. And I always liken it to the fact that I feel that at that moment in my life, I cloned myself and it was like two of me existed. The little girl who was innocent up until that day. And she was frozen in time. And then I just became the person that was trying to survive and trying not to hurt anymore and trying to make sense of what happened to me. Because at that age, I didn't have anyone explaining to me about sex or anything like that. I'm pretty sure because I don't ever remember ever having that talk with my parents, no matter how old I was. But I just knew that I was different. And I just didn't feel like that little girl anymore. But she kept taking over, as I said before, life, because she would pop up trying to reclaim her time, trying to reclaim her innocence, trying to get someone to tell her that she was still worth it, that she was still worthy, that it wasn't her fault, that she was okay, she was still a good little girl. But that never happened. And as I got older, the relationships that I was in were with people that had the same level of neediness that I had, and I didn't recognize that we were attracting each other out of need, not out of love. They were feeling inadequate, and they were dealing with their own abuse, and they were dealing with their own trauma. And they were looking for someone to fill that bucket of appreciation and looking for someone to fill that bucket of worthiness and looking for someone to heal them. So we were both emotionally ill and passing germs back and forth to each other and didn't even know it. But I figured that because they were tall or strong looking or loud or had this bad boy persona, this take charge mentality, that that's what I needed in my life. And they would never let hurt me or anybody hurt me, but they were hurting me because they were looking for the same thing from me.
and I couldn't be that. And when I said that it affects a lot of areas in your life, if not all areas in your life, I didn't pursue some dreams that I had because of the feeling of being inadequate, sexually violated, that you develop low self-esteem. So I wouldn't pursue some of my dreams because I didn't think that I could do it. I didn't think that I was worthy enough. That in turn affected my income, my money. Dealing with being victimized has layers to it. And if you really want to move forward in your life and you really want to achieve the type of life that you've always desired to live, to deal with the places in your life that are broken, that needs to be healed, and you may say to yourself, you know, I'm doing just fine. I've got everything that I've ever wanted. Got the man, the kids, the house, the car, the money. But what about your peace? Are you tired of pretending? Are you tired of pretending that you have it all together? And the only reason that you're pretending is because there's something in your subconscious, a little voice of your mind, still whispering to you that you're not worthy. That you have a dirty little secret. And if people were to find out about you, they wouldn't want you anymore. They wouldn't want you around. They wouldn't want you in their circle. They wouldn't want you in their lives. Are you tired of going to bed at night? And the memories become nightmares. No matter how much you will them to go away, they still keep coming back. No amount of money, no level of prestige, no outside personal thing can ever take. So if you need someone to just be an ear or to go to that space with you, to stand in that place with you, to hold you while you deal with it, I'm here for you. And again, I'd like for you to either go to my website and message me there at coachscharris.com. As soon as you pull up the website at the bottom of the page, you can email me a message that way. Or you can Facebook Messenger me on my Facebook page, No Longer Broken. We've got what it takes to be healed, to actively pursue our healing. It won't come through osmosis. I offer healing meditations, as well as coaching programs and sessions. I also offer a healing VIP day where you and I spend the day together, going deep, peeling back the layers of your trauma, and tapping into the root cause to begin your healing process. I just desire for us to be the best women that we can be, the best mothers that we can be, the best sisters that we can be, as wives, girlfriends, senators, congressmen, doctors, scientists, teachers, whatever it is that we're called to be. I just want us to be that. And I know that healing is something that you have to actively pursue. It's the same way as if you are going to the doctor. The doctor doesn't come to you because the doctor doesn't know that you're sick. If you want to receive, if you want to receive treatment, you have to go to where you know that you can receive help. And I've worked through this and I've done this, and I can help you as well. But I can't help you if I don't know that you need the help. And if you're listening to me right now, then that means that you were put on a station for a specific time and for a specific reason, so that you can be able to receive the healing that you need. So as always, I would like to thank you for joining me this evening and taking your time to listen to the Initiative Radio Network and tuning in to Sister to Sister Free Talk Friday. I pray that you will enjoy the rest of your weekend and that you will love on yourself. You will take time to do something for yourself, sit back and chill, and just reflect on what it is that you need in your life and where you can choose to make the right choices to go further in your life. So I will talk to you again, willing, next Friday, same station, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as always, go in peace, love, and light. And until next time, this is your life and economic empowerment strategy, Shannon. See the rest of your weekend. I love you with all my heart, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.